Welcome back, everybody. After a 4-day weekend, which has rendered me unable to do this job, I don't really remember what we do.
I don't know. Your hair looks good. Did you get a haircut over the weekend? I saw you over the weekend.
No, I gave myself a haircut a couple weeks ago. Okay. And I put stuff in it.
Okay.
I guess it worked.
Right. Thank you. We're here.
Well, your hair always looks great.
Thank
good job.
You.
I assume you also cut it yourself. that's Brooke, by the way. Hey, Brooke.
That's Brooke. Yeah. I'm
How's
here.
It going?
Good. It's going
We've
well.
Got a lot of news. A little bit of it is going to touch base with some of the news that we missed when we were gone for our 4-day weekend. But it seems like everybody, you know, highly placed in the Democratic Party has taken shots at AOC recently. So we're going to be talking about those. People taking shots at Disney as well. We're going to be ending the show with that. Ariel's pissing people off, and Mulan is pissing people off, and it's just a big old mess. So we're going to be talking about that as well. We've also got two awesome guests. Carrie Levine is going to be joining us once again. I didn't really know this, but traditionally Democrats have had a big advantage in online fundraising. Perhaps not in the future, because the Republicans have a new platform that they think will help level the playing field. And we're also going to talk about coal-fired power plants. Can we afford to have them, or will they destroy our civilization? We've got a guest joining us from National Geographic to talk about that in just a little bit. But we're going to be starting off with the big sports news of the week, because there is a political angle there when we talk about soccer. Over the weekend, as I'm sure literally everyone watching this knows.
Yeah, at 8 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, everybody knows this already. But the US women's national team won 2-0. I actually watched it, which I did not watch a lot of the games. I watched bits and pieces of all of them, but they won. They beat Netherlands in the 2019 Women's World Cup 2-0, following a month-long tournament that attracted more attention to the sport and to social issues surrounding the Women's League, which we're going to talk about, than ever before. It was a great game. It was a great end to this really dramatic cycle over the course of a month of, you know, there was Rapinoe was attacking Trump, and then a Trump is attacking a super girl, and like the back and forth, the ridiculous back and forth over all that. And to see them win once again is both good, you know, although as someone put out on Twitter, the US winning in a sport that literally everyone likes more than us is just perfect.
Yeah.
So I feel a little bit bad for the world in that respect, but that team was dominant.
Yeah,
so it's really not that surprising
exactly.
as an outsider to the sport.
And she didn't attack Trump. She just said she wasn't going to go to the racist house.
I'm not judging her. I wanted to attack Trump like she attacks the goal. I wanted to go the whole way on it. I was not judging her there. Although, as we're going to get to, one of the reasons we're going to talk about this is because Fox News viewers are not happy about the United States winning an international sports competition.
Which is, everything means nothing.
Everything means nothing.
Everything
means
nothing.
But first, before everything means nothing, something means nothing. And that is, generally when teams like this win the big game, they get invited to the White House. That might be coming, although Rapinoe, as you just mentioned, had said that she didn't think they were gonna be invited and she wouldn't go if they were.
And he already technically invited them. In the same tweet,
yes,
he did.
Yeah.
But you got to win first.
We'll see if it ends up. Mm-hmm. Like, did they actually order the McDonald's? We'll find out. But they did get this from Nancy Pelosi saying, "Congrats to the U.S. Women's National Team for winning with strength, unity, and patriotism by popular bipartisan demand, and with Representative Castor and Representative LaHood, co-chairs of Soccer Caucus, which is, I guess, a thing."
A thing, right?
I'm pleased to invite the players of the U.S. Capitol as a team or individually to celebrate your inspiring victory. 4 stars, but I rate it 0 stars for originality, because this isn't your idea. You didn't come up with this. AOC had already, like 2 weeks ago, said it may not be the White House, but we'd be happy to welcome. That's to Rapinoe at that time, and the entire team for a tour of the House of Representatives anytime they'd like. And she had responded that she wanted to.
Yeah, I don't understand. That was a weird
stealing her plans
kind of tweet. You want the Speaker of the House to be excited about this and to agree with it, but why not just tag on to what AOC said? Like, yeah, you're right. We would love that. Remember, AOC invited you. We want to see, you know, I don't know. That was weird. And I feel like on one hand, it could look like we're being nitpicky. On the other hand, it was kind of weird.
We're just being human and
honest.
Yeah, I brought it up to see from your point of view, am I being nitpicky?
No, it was weird, but like, because it was weird to not acknowledge that someone else on your team has already said.
And I guess, so I just want to ask the audience, AOC had not brought it up, okay?
Yes, she still would.
Would she have?
Yes, because AOC.
You think she would have?
Yes, because remember, Golden State had that meeting with, you know, my favorite congressperson of all time, Representative John Lewis, when they didn't go to Trump's White House. So it wasn't AOC's original idea another politician. But yes, I think she would have done it because another congressman has done this before.
Yeah. Okay, maybe. Yeah. Maybe. Again, dead wrong. But the debate
around
this. I'm
pretty sure they went and visited him. I'm pretty sure. I don't think it was like.
I know. I'm saying for this particular one, I don't know that Pelosi is necessarily watching all these international sporting events. Nobody's like, U.S. women's gymnastics, come on down to the SCOTUS.
But the Golden State Warriors is not some fringe sport out there. Like,
I know.
Gymnastics is
that's why I'm saying it's one thing to ask them. It's another to be watching these international sports and to express interest, which we don't know if she would have.
Okay.
But just because they won doesn't mean that they've won everything. And as we alluded to, there are these social issues around women's pay and all that. Mm-hmm. After they won, AOC tweeted, at this point, we shouldn't even be asking for equal pay for the women's team. We should demand that they be paid at least twice as much. And she put a winky face there because I think that she knows how much that's going to piss off conservatives in this country.
And I was having a conversation with a friend about this last night. One, yes, this team should be paid more, but period. Women should be paid the same as men because it's not about
performance.
The same
or less.
No.
Oh, just sorry, the same. Yes,
it should be in all jobs. If the job is the same, period. And people like to say, well, the WNBA doesn't have as much popularity as the NBA. But there are, like, I can name a handful at least of superstars, WNBA superstars that were more famous than NBA non-superstars, and those non-superstars still got paid more than Cheryl Swoops and Lisa Leslie and Candace Parker. So it's not about performance. And what about like the old rich white guys who should lose their jobs in marketing to, you know, young black guys on Twitter who would kill it and have people, you know, fighting over WNBA tickets? Like, I just think that it's never really about performance because there are a lot of people, a lot of men who keep their jobs when they underperform in all aspects of life.
Yeah. Well, let's not shake the boat too much. But on the sports thing, because if I suddenly my views go down, I don't want to get replaced. Look, I think if one
you
league.
You don't want to get replaced.
No, I don't. I think if one league gets way more viewership than another, it makes sense that they'd make more money. But we can't pretend that the marketing is the same for both and all of that. And a lot of the stigma that stops people from watching women's sports doesn't necessarily have to exist in all worlds. Right. You could do something, a marketing campaign, to get around that. And I think that the women in this case have done that. Because I read that there actually were more viewers of this World Cup than the men's 2 years ago. They're not going to get paid as much, but more people actually watch them, in part because not only that they were dominant and great athletes, but also because they, like athletes in all sports, made it a drama and made it interesting to watch and all of that.
Yeah. My point is that we nitpick women and why women, you know, we can find a technicality as a reason why women should be paid less when they are, but we do not keep that same energy for men. Mm-hmm. The men's national soccer team is never going to be paid less than the women. They are never going to be paid. And the pay disparity is shocking when you look at it. That's never going to happen.
I'm not disagreering with you. I've made many videos over the past couple years on this particular topic.
I don't think it should even matter.
To some extent, it's not up to you and it's not up to me. It's up to everybody. Because the question is going to be, and there was a full page op-ed in the fill in the blank, I forget which, but it was one, and it was, it's on you guys now, are you going to keep watching? Because more people watched, as we just said, very popular, people really passionate, but if 9 out of 10 of those people are like, oh, well then I don't care about women's soccer anymore, I'll see it in 4 years, then they're not going to get paid more. But if they do keep watching, then that is a powerful incentive to pay them more, I hope.
You know what? How do I explain what I'm trying to say? Obviously, I think that there's a new surge in all things because of social media. But when Mia Hamm was everyone's favorite female athlete, people were watching soccer back then. So the idea that people are just going to drop off now or that it's about popularity. But they've been watching since I was a kid.
Yeah, but their watching is a loose term. How many are watching?
It seems like lots.
Are the crowds that were watching the World Cup going to watch the league? You know, in the next season?
Okay.
I highly doubt it.
In the US, period, though, right?
I don't know. We'll see. I'm just saying, I'm not an expert on the stats, but I'm saying we can't just say they're watching. Clearly, viewership goes up and down and all of that stuff. But a lot of it is going to be, is there pressure on the owners and the managers of the league to pay them more? Because if they can get away with not paying them, then it doesn't necessarily even matter how many people watch. They're just going to keep doing it. But hopefully there will be a lot of political pressure and you have the right sorts of people doing that right now. Really fast, I do want to mention, while I think we see it as a net good that our team won, yay. And they're awesome and they're working hard and they were having fun. Not everybody was happy about it.
So
in an article posted about the team winning on Fox News, some of the comments included, who cares? I'm not proud of them unless they're proud of our country. Let them represent some other country. So In that comment, he says, I'm not proud of them unless they're proud of our country, as he is not proud of his country winning, demonstrating exactly the opposite of the point he was trying to make.
Yeah.
The second, so I apologize in advance, but I just want to make clear how casual the misogyny and homophobia is on the Fox News website. One guy commented, bet she'll be munching carpet tonight. So, first of all, you would never say that about a male athlete who had just won a competition. Second of all, that's presumably what a lesbian would want to do. It's not an insult. Like, how stupid of a comment is that?
Yeah.
To make that, thinking that you got her, you got her good there.
Yeah.
And that's just on a news site. That's a comment. Now, thankfully, some people did respond negatively towards that individual.
Yeah.
And then there's just a ton of just body shaming them. And I wanted them to lose. They're the worst examples of sportsmanship I've ever seen. The other team was right when she called them arrogant. And I won't even start in Rapina or whatever her name is, or we'll be here till supper. First of all, has this person ever posted a comment on a male athlete who was showboating after he won or before he won?
I think sportsmanship comments are
Muhammad Ali?
Stupid, period.
Yeah.
It's really stupid because you have no idea what these people put their bodies through. So if you want to cheer like a crazy person, I don't care. It's cool to teach your 8-year-old sportsmanship because sometimes 8-year-olds go too far and you have to teach them how not to be mean to each other. It's not even really about like, don't be too proud. It's like, okay, relax.
Yeah.
But these are grown people who put their bodies on the line and like restrict themselves and work out and work through injuries like you could never imagine. I don't care if you cheer hard. This is stupid. I always think that is so like the person who could never be paid to be an athlete just finding something to complain about.
And,
like
and
you're
I
really
think,
mad that they cheered too hard, go away.
But that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
They're not mad that someone cheered. They get mad when particular people cheer. So if it's these women partying it up in the locker room, oh, they're not being professional or classy enough. If it's an end zone dance, it's usually it's not Tom Brady that they're criticizing for that. It usually is certain types of people aren't classy in the way that I want.
Yeah.
But if a white athlete is full of himself, it's like, yeah, he's great. You know, he's the best.
Nobody complains about Tom Brady or Peyton
Manning. I don't know how he celebrates.
Celebrating, I don't
know. Yeah, but probably
celebrates
not
a lot though. Okay, because
I guess. So anyway, we're proud of you, and I doubt they really are going to lose a lot of sleep for the fact that Fox News is not proud of them.
Yeah.
Or that Donald Trump probably was really pissed when they won, which is a nice little added bonus.
But he's such Team USA.
Yes.
Just making America great again.
Make America great again, except soccer, unless they love me. But again, and this is just one more thing where it's like they say that it's about America, but it's not at the end of the day.
Never,
it's about
right.
The cult of Trump. And if that lines up with America, then they're a fan of it. But if not, they choose Trump every time. Okay, we're gonna take a short break. We'll come back, interview on the other side.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called Unfucking the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
The climate is breaking down all around us, but we're really not acting like it, economically and politically. At the same time that we're considering plans like the Green New Deal, we're also considering building dozens or hundreds of coal-fired power plants here in the US and around the world. But can the world sustain that sort of new investment in dirty fuel? Joining us now to break it down, Stephen Leahy, international environmental journalist. Stephen, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Sean. It's great to be here.
Glad to have you here. And I enjoyed your recent article in National Geographic about a new study on what it could mean if we do go forward with building more of these coal-fired power plants. Can you tell us a little bit about what that study found?
The study found if we continue building more fossil fuel plants, we have no chance of getting to the agreed-on climate target of 1.5 Celsius of global warming. That's a Paris target that was all countries in the world agreed to keep our climate change to that level. In fact, we'll probably end up at 2 degrees if we keep building fossil fuel plants.
And on this show, we talk about what that threshold would mean. But just in case anyone's tuning in for the first time, what would a world be like in which we had heated 2 degrees or higher?
It would be a world of extreme climate events. So we've already seen huge amounts of flooding this spring in the Midwest. A record-breaking heat wave in Europe, the meltdown of much of the Arctic ice, all of those things will just get much, much worse the warmer we get. So we're looking at, famines, natural disasters where hundreds of thousands of people will be homeless. It's a chaotic, unpleasant world that nobody wants to live in.
So in this analysis and from your point of view, is there any path forward to limiting the heating to 1.5 degrees or less where we are building many more of these coal-fired power plants?
No, it can't be done at this point. We don't have the technology to take carbon out of the fossil fuel that we're using right now. So the only way at this point is for us to stop building more things that use fossil fuel.
And the prospect of shutting down hundreds or thousands of these plants, it seems like it would probably be politically difficult to do that. Do you envision a big battle if someone were to propose moving in that direction? And if so, how soon could we begin to do that and have alternative power to switch to?
Well, first of all, we already have alternative, like solar and wind, and they're already cost competitive with things like coal. So solar and wind, along with some battery storage, can easily compete now with coal. It's still going to be a big transition. Take a country like Germany, which is very green in many respects. They're having a hard time shutting down their coal mines, and they have some of the dirtiest coal in the world. But the coal industry is quite influential there. But they are actually slowly but surely shutting it down.
And at the same time that the countries in Europe are making some good moves in investing in wind and solar and things like that, in the article you talk about how important in the near future China will be because of the relative youth of many of their coal plants. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, China, of course, has come to the industrial age a little bit later than the rest of us. And so to do so, they built an enormous number of coal power plants just in the last couple of decades. In the US, the coal plants are usually quite old, 40, 50 years old. In China, they're 10 to 20 years old. So those things are going to have to be shut down earlier than their life expectancy would be if China and the rest of the world wants to have a livable climate.
And does it seem like that might be a likelihood that China could be convinced to, in the next 10 or 15 or 20 years, transition away from these coal plants, even though they would still have lifespan after that point?
Yeah, I think China is definitely one country where this could happen faster than anywhere else. For one thing, they're already the biggest manufacturer of solar panels in the world. They also have a tremendous air pollution problem. Most of their cities are terribly polluted. So they have a lot of incentive to switch to cleaner energy generation. They also see it as a an enormous global market for themselves to sell cheap solar panels, cheap batteries, and cheap wind farms to the rest of the world.
Okay, so obviously there's some negative information there, but also possible paths forward. And anyone watching this, I would recommend that you go to the National Geographic and read Stephen's article, because it has a lot of other great information about some of these aspects of the story. So Stephen, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thanks. Thanks, John.
We're gonna take a short break here. When we come back, lots more domestic news for you.
How do you convince the party that these more advanced ideas, like all in on Medicare for all, that matter to them?
I wouldn't call them advanced.
But they're popular in the party.
So there you have Joe Biden, whose face seems to be set in a permanent look of bewilderment these days, fighting back against the obvious popularity of these new proposals that have been driving political discourse over the past year or so. And he doesn't think that they're really being advanced or that he needs to follow them. He's trying to spin basically the entire thrust of the party recently as some weird aberration like Donald Trump that he's gonna sweep back in and fix. We've got more for you, but there he had a long-ranging conversation with Chris Cuomo. And not only did I take issue with a lot of the things that he said that we'll show you here, but I don't know, in the clips that I saw, he really seems to have lost a step.
You know what's fascinating to me, because I think a lot of politicians make that very argument, that these policies that you're pushing are far too progressive. Mm. Only a minimal people want these. The majority of people are center left, center right-ish. Mm-hmm. But that has never been an actual like political argument. Since I have known what a president was, it seemed that all of the policies that help run this country really were focused on rich white men. Mm-hmm. So now all of a sudden, when people say, hey, these policies, maybe they're not super popular with everybody, but they will help everybody. Mm-hmm. And there's a big group of people who have never been helped, have never been paid attention to. You've never had policies directed towards them. And this will help people. This will help lower class people. This will help poor people. This will help black people. This will help other marginalized communities. This will help women. It's like, well, but everybody wants something that just doesn't go that far. Now all of a sudden you care about a majority.
And he said, he did the thing sort of alluding to what you said, where he's like, my North Star has always been the middle class, because if the middle class is doing well, everybody is doing well. Well, sort of, a lot of politicians have said that. And generally the policies that are derived from a desire to help the middle class are things that maybe help the middle class, but definitely help the upper middle class and upper class. And but that's who they target, because those people are more likely to vote and they're certainly more likely to donate money to politicians.
Yeah, but also even speaking about people like that, using the middle class as a euphemism for white Americans, that's so bothersome.
Oh, I know, that's what I was saying.
Yeah, you know,
say.
I know. But like, you can't say that like I have been focused on the middle class when you also have been focused on a lot of initiatives that harmed black and brown people who sometimes are also part of the middle class. So you weren't really focused. You know what I mean? And it happens a lot. Like when we talk about people, I was focused on women, but not black women, because you voted for this, which would have then harmed them. So only white women. That's what we're talking about. Only white people in the middle classes. We're talking about. And I hate that we're still doing that. In 2019.
Well, and at the same time that there, he's sort of pushing back against some of the big ideas that are driving passion for some of these Democratic candidates. He's also pushing back against the individuals who were elected in 2018 on these ideas. And so here he is talking about AOC and others.
Watch. That's what this election is about. I'm happy to debate that issue and all those issues with my friends, because guess what? Again, look who won the races. Look who won last time out. We had, and by the way, I think Ocasio-Cortez is a brilliant, bright woman, but she won a primary. In the general election fights, who won?
Okay, so here's the thing. I don't know why we would have to explain this, but Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez did not just win her primary, she won the general election. And she's not the only one. The group that gets, you know, lumped in with her, because ideologically there's some similarities, which we're gonna talk about, they won their general elections. That's why they're in elected office right now. They didn't win their primary and then go down in flames because they were too far left or anything like that. They won, and they won in multiple parts of the country.
And I get what he's saying, though, is that the general election in her race was a shoo-in. Whoever won the Dem, we knew that, but the primary was a battle. That was a big deal. And the person she beat is somebody who he's talking about. You're saying that, no, this is the type of person that Democrats want. And Democrats there said they didn't want this type of person anymore. And so he's like right and wrong at the same time, which was weird.
But here's the other issue, because the argument that he's making in vague terms is an argument we hear a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. Okay, sure, they won, but hypothetically, in examples we don't have, they could lose difficult general elections. As if there's no counter argument to that his policy, which is to run more centrist candidates, okay, can we not look at the track record there? In 2016, we had the more centrist candidate. She lost. Now, she did get more votes, but she still lost the Electoral College very narrowly. Okay? In 2018, at the same time that AOC and Ayanna Pressley and Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib were winning their elections, we ran centrist Democrats in a lot of Senate races that went down in flames. Why didn't they win if your strategy is so amazing, Joe Biden?
Why haven't you ever won the presidency?
Why haven't you even won the primary? It's easy for him to be like, oh, sure, they won the primary. That's easy. Okay, do it. Do it once out of the multiple times that you've run for president. And look, maybe he will. Maybe it's, you know, knock on wood or whatever, but it's right, not going like, great lately.
Right. He's going to show you. He's going to have you in a campaign ad.
And the reason why he might lose the primary is because he is sort of coasting on this nostalgia and familiarity with him from the Obama years, which I get. But when it comes to the issues, he is not the guy leading the conversation, and Cuomo raised that to him as well.
Right.
People in party right now, when polled, who say, yeah, I like Joe Biden, but I think that his ideas are the old ideas. The new ideas, I see a Warren, I see a Sanders, I see a Harris. You poll lower than them. You poll lower than them on ideas for the future. What do you say to them?
I say to them, take a look at my ideas. Take a look at my ideas. I haven't seen those polls. I haven't seen where people say, what I've seen around the country is the vast majority of Democrats are where I am on the issues.
Okay, but this is not something where it's just like, you know, who's to say? We can look, we know where the polls are on Medicare for All, $15 minimum wage, actually doing something about climate change, the list goes on and on. They're not where you're at. This is not a thing that we need to debate. We can do the actual research.
I think they're talking about two different things there. I think Hugh understood what Cuomo was saying, but I don't think Joe Biden did.
What do you think he thought?
Talking about overall presidential, who do you like candidate polls, and he's running away with all of them. So
if you can't follow a question that easy, that is an issue, I think.
Well, is that the biggest issue?
The biggest issue that he can't, there's others, right, yes, that's a big one.
Right, I think we know that that's possible, that he's not gonna be following along with everything.
And the thing is, like,
he does seem lost a lot, like, or he's just intentionally not listening. Yeah, for sure.
I don't want a general election where Donald Trump gets to pick on him in the same way that we're already doing it, because a reasonable person watches him talk and thinks that's not the Joe Biden of 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. And also, he's purposefully playing dumb there.
Yeah.
He's asked about the difference between an overall feeling of okayness with a candidate and who they like on the ideas. And he says, well, just look at my ideas. But he knows full well that he's running a candidacy that is trying to avoid talking about the issues. He's not putting out policy position papers like Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders. He's purposefully dodging questions. He was asked about his healthcare policy at a town hall. And he said, well, you know, I don't have time to go into all the details. No, you don't have the desire to go into all the details. And when he was asked questions at the debate, he would talk about nostalgia and he'd talk about his friend Barack and all of that. Not, here's my 10-point plan for dealing with climate breakdown. That is not the candidacy he's running. So he can say, look at my plans. I'd love to present them.
Yeah. He also, it's just overwhelmingly fascinating for me and sad that he doesn't backtrack on anything or apologize for anything or admit being wrong about anything. Mm-hmm. It's more of just explaining it, because just right there, look at your ideas. Oh, buddy, we've been looking at your ideas.
Yeah,
and
you don't
some
like
of
it.
Them are scaring us to death. Some of these old videos, which are full of your ideas, are terrifying. And you won't say sorry for any of that, which is where I think it just makes it's frustrating for a lot of people, because nobody is perfect. I mean, I'm fine, but like, you make mistakes every day. And it's like,
look at her ideas.
No, but seriously, that's not a thing, that there's not one issue or policy or idea that he is willing to say, that wasn't
great. I was wrong on that.
Yeah.
And I could come up with some. And the thing is, it doesn't bother Joe Biden if I can list the flaws of him as a candidate. But Kamala Harris did it and it wasn't hard. And that wasn't even the lowest hanging fruit necessarily for, like, she went back, big issue. There's lots of, talk about the crime bill, talk about the vote for the Iraq war, talk about the tax cut, like all that. That's all gonna come up and that's gonna be a massive issue for him. We're gonna look at your ideas, but you're not gonna like it. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's turn to another group criticizing that group actually. So we're gonna turn to Nancy Pelosi now. Yeah, squad ungoals from Nancy Pelosi. Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi was recently profiled by Maureen Dowd in the New York Times. And in it, amongst talk about what sorts of food she likes and all that, she also found time to bash the women who are leading the charge in Congress for the Democratic Party. With Pelosi saying that the four, talking about AOC, Ilhan Omar, you know the group, made themselves irrelevant to the process by voting against our bill. Talking about the compromise bill with the Senate on the migrant aid, that air quotes around that, because it doesn't really help them, it helps build a wall. As she put it, which she felt was the strongest one she could get. In her defense, she did fight for minutes. She said all these people have their public whatever and their Twitter world, but they didn't have any following. There are four people and that's how many votes they got. So these four, these brand new four to Congress who were willing to defy the leadership to fight, to stand for their values, she's mocking them for that because they chose, like Barbara Lee, to be the one voice of opposition to stand for their principles. That apparently isn't good enough. Well, AOC responded by saying that public whatever is called public sentiment, and wielding the power to shift it is how we actually achieve meaningful change in this country. I find it strange when members act as though social media isn't important. They set millions of dollars on fire to run TV ads so people can see their message. I haven't dialed for dollars once this year and have more time to do my actual job, yet we'd rather campaign like it's 2008. So that was AOC. Jeff Stein of the Washington Post pointed out, worth noting, each member of the squad is now the lead author of pivotal policy proposals with AOC on the Green New Deal. Rashida Tlaib, the biggest federal anti-poverty subsidy. Ilhan Omar, $1.6 trillion in student debt forgiveness that she worked with Bernie Sanders on. And Ayanna Pressley, back pay for contractors in the shutdown. Meanwhile, Nancy Pelosi, I mean, she clapped and then she gave billions of dollars to Trump. I don't know what else really has been going on.
What would it hurt Nancy Pelosi to just go wild and just go for it? This is her last term, right? So just.
No, she doesn't see it that way. Unless you mean.
You think that she does think that she's just going for it, right?
I think she thinks what I'm going to do is hold my breath until Trump isn't president anymore, maintain leadership of the Democrats in the House. We get Joe Biden or whoever, and then I'm in position to do something. I think that's what it is. And that's why she doesn't want to rock the boat with impeachment. You know, she's ignoring the new sexual assault allegations.
What would it hurt her to rock the boat right now?
I mean, I think that she's psychologically predisposed against that.
Because
she has gotten into power in the way that she has.
She wants.
Well, she's doing what she does.
Yeah.
And she will pitch it as she's done all this great stuff. Let me read a couple more quotes from her. Maybe that'll help flush it out. She pinned the blame for the border bill on Mitch McConnell. In the era when millennials prize authenticity, she said McConnell is authentically terrible. Ooh, burn. She has had a working relationship with him for years, but now she says the Senate Majority Leader, quote, has really crossed a threshold with me. Now? In 2019, he's crossed the threshold. What did he do during all the Obama years? He literally stole the Supreme Court seat, but now he's crossed the Rubicon.
Yeah.
So she's caught on eventually. She said, with all due respect, the press likes to make a story that is more about Democrats divided than the fact that Mitch McConnell doesn't care about the children. No, but the story isn't about him not caring about the children. We know he doesn't care about the children. The question is he gonna be given billions of dollars to spend on a wall? You did that, not Mitch McConnell. And the press isn't making it a story about Democrats divided. You're literally attacking members of your own caucus in this interview with Maureen Dowd. You did that, and Biden did that. And you guys can't seem to go 5 minutes without attacking the people that are the only reason we're paying attention to you in Congress literally at all.
Right, we know Mitch McConnell doesn't care about the children. There have been multiple stories over and over and over. And the reason that you're the focus is because we're hoping you will force him to care about the children, to do something that he, because you're, you're in charge.
You are in charge. Unfortunately, but you are. What? One more quote from her. She says, if the left doesn't think I'm left enough, so be it, she said breezily. That's Maureen Dowd's thing, whatever. Yeah. As I say to these people, come to my basement. I have these signs about single payer from 30 years ago. I understand what they're saying, but we have a responsibility to get something done, which is different from advocacy. We have to have a solution, not just a Twitter fight. The issue is you don't have a solution and you don't even engage in Twitter fights.
Right,
and
the issue is the signs are in your basement.
Don't make me go to your basement.
Right.
What have you done for me that's not packed away in a crawl space?
When they should be on your front lawn. The signs are in your basement.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
Yes.
Your
signs are in the basement.
Cell phone.
And the Sunrise Movement is outside your door. Which was more effective? And if you've been talking about single payer for 30 years, why is it that it took Bernie Sanders' candidacy to make it a thing where now it's a part of the conversation? You've been a leader in the Democratic Party. Bernie's not even a Democrat, as they say. And yet you didn't push all these candidates to get behind Medicare for All in one formulation or another. It took Bernie Sanders to do that. And on all these other issues, you are technically in leadership, but in none of these examples are you actually leading. Even now, when you have the ear of Maureen Dowd, what's going to be a front page story in the New York Times, you can't make it about your bold proposals for what you're going to do as leader of the Democrats in Congress. You're just pushing back against the ideas from people who are brand new in those offices. You are standing astride the thrust of history and trying to make sure that nothing changes whatsoever, while also protecting Donald Trump from any consequences for the things that he's done, whether illegal acts in office or sexual assaults before he got in office. What is the purpose of Nancy Pelosi?
Listen.
It's frustrating.
And you should be frustrated. She should be frustrated less with criticism and more with the people that she has to have a working relationship with.
Yeah. You should be so lucky to have a working relationship with those people. I wish I was working with those people. And she is wasting it.
I don't, but I wish someone like you was.
Someone other than me? Okay.
Well, no, someone like you.
Look at her ideas. Okay, that's all the time we have. We are going to take a short break. We'll be coming back more for you. One area of fundraising that Democrats have traditionally had a pretty big advantage is online, with sources like Act Blue bringing in lots of money for a lot of different candidates. But the Republicans have a plan to nullify that advantage. And joining us now to break it down, Carrie Levine, senior reporter for the Center for Public Integrity. Carrie, welcome back to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you for joining us. So what is WinRed? How are the Republicans going to catch up when it comes to online fundraising?
Right. Well, Republicans realized after the 2018 elections that they had a real fundraising gap online. Democratic House and Senate candidates pulled in about twice as much money as Republican House and Senate candidates. And everyone pointed to Act Blue, which is a fundraising platform that lets Democrats and progressive groups more easily raise money online. And so Act Blue has been around for 15 years, and Republicans have been aware of it. There's been past attempts to try and match it, to create easier ways for Republican candidates to raise money online, and they've just never caught on. So now, after a decade of trying to catch up, Republicans say they've finally figured out how to do it with WinRed, which is a new fundraising platform for Republicans that's backed by the president, by Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, by party leaders and party committees, who have come together to launch this. And the Republican Party, through its data organization, actually controls a piece of it. So they're trying to get this off the ground. And I think the real question is, will this work when other attempts have not?
Well, I think that's really the question. I mean, as you point out, the fact that Donald Trump has tweeted about this, he seems enthusiastic about it. Although, I guess the durability of his support for down ballot races has always been very contingent on like their personal fealty to him, things like that. I mean, you've studied these past attempts to set up a platform like WinRed. Does this one stand out as something that could work when others have not?
Well, you touched on a really interesting point, which is that, how will the president translate his own success with small dollar donors? Because he has actually been very successful with small dollar donors to other down ballot candidates. And that's something that really hasn't happened yet. So the way they're hoping to do it is by putting the president on this WinRed platform, and then when donors give to him, they have the option to save their information so they can more easily give to other Republican candidates with a single click.
Mm.
Now, that's not everything. You know, one way or another, these candidates have to find these donors, have to make them want to contribute to them. And so that's something Republican candidates are going to have to be willing to do, is put energy and resources into building their donor list, into building their donor outreach, so they can tap these donors. Even if these donors can give with one click, they still have to want to.
Yeah. And so that's the other interesting thing here. Has the Trump campaign been willing to share their email list and their other lists of supporters with other candidates prior to WinRed? Does it seem like that is going to help to nullify some of the Democratic advantage in this list building, some of which has been derived from as far back as the Obama years?
Right. So one thing that is different is that you often see Democratic candidates raising money together, sending out emails to their lists on behalf of other candidates. And that kind of tandem fundraising, where they then split the proceeds and share the sort of data that comes out of it, the donor contact information that comes out of it, is something that Republicans have been eyeing with envy. But there's going to have to be a cultural shift on the Republican side for them to do that. And obviously, Trump's donor list is really just the most robust one right now. It's a national list. He's got a zillion donors that have given to him. And so I think people are really hoping to leverage it through this, whether they'll actually be able to, and whether those donors want to give to other Republican candidates, even if the president tells them to, is something that we just don't know yet.
Although it does look like they have set up this platform early enough that it could make a mark in this upcoming election. So perhaps that will be the first big test for it. Carrie Levine of the Center for Public Integrity, thank you as always for joining us.
Thank you.
We're going to take a short break here. When we come back, Disney has a new Ariel, and racists are pissed about it. After this.
All right, big news for little kids and kids at heart like John. Disney has cast singer-actress Halle Bailey as Ariel in The Little Mermaid. So great news, right? This is great news. Except soon after, hashtag not my Ariel started trending because people are awful, okay? Case in point, this tweet. Look at this, John. So this woman, and this is, she's not the only one tweeting things like that, right? Saying, it's not a movie about mermaids. What? It's about the 1989 Disney movie based on the story, The Little Mermaid, written by Hans Christian Andersen, where he describes white skin and blue eyes. Ariel is from Denmark. Listen, stop. This is so stupid. I don't even want to finish reading it, but this is stupid. It is a movie about mermaids. It's about people living under the sea and a woman who is half fish.
I don't know if that's technically
getting
true.
Getting legs, right?
Yes, phenotypically she's half true or half fish. Yeah, and she hangs out with lobsters and stuff.
She has a talking lobster for a friend and a talking flounder for a friend. Yeah. Her father is also a mermaid. Mm-hmm. And her aunt is an octopus.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
What?
Pretty evil one, too. I'm going to guess that the people who have an issue with this probably have an issue with any addition of diversity to any story. And it's not necessarily that they want to protect Denmark's folklore.
Right. And you know, it's ridiculous. They're also at this point comparing it to the demand for culturally appropriate casting for Aladdin, which is absolutely ridiculous. But they have gone and actually started a change.org petition. Mm-hmm. And thousands of people have signed it. It's stupid. And
or as I pointed out, it's more of a please don't change.org.
It's exactly what it is.
I can't handle any change.org.
Please, I can't. And so Halle is actually on a TV show called Grownish. Mm. It's a spinoff of Blackish. It's on Freeform. And the people at Freeform actually put out a really cool statement kind of defending her. And part of it, I'm just going to read part of it, but it says, so after all this is said and done, if you still cannot get past the idea that choosing the incredible, sensational, highly talented, gorgeous Halle Bailey is anything other than the inspired casting that it is because she doesn't look like the cartoon one, oh boy, do I have some news for you about you. And I also do want to say something like to the people who are comparing, who say, you know, well, we like diversity. We just don't want someone, we want our, you know, our kids have red hair and they don't see that a lot. Mm-hmm. But you cannot compare your hair color to someone being black. It's absurd. Mm-hmm. You're a jerk if you do. And also, let's raise kids. I do. I think so. And I think let's raise kids who embrace the idea that their black friends and their black castmates can all of a sudden see someone who looks like them. And To be fair, if Disney was diverse long time ago, back when they were shooting all these movies out, mm-hmm. half of the Disney princesses would already be black.
Yeah.
So Ariel may not even have been your dream red-haired princess. And also,
who, by the way, was not based on anyone. I don't think Alyssa Milano is from the Netherlands.
Nobody.
But that's who she was based on.
Is a mermaid.
Yeah, they're not actually any mermaids.
But like, yeah, like black people can have red hair too. Mm-hmm. They do have red hair. Regardless of who plays this, they are going to have to wear some form of a wig or have their hair painted.
Yeah.
Because
well,
nobody
probably not
has hair
fins
like that.
Too.
They're also right. They're going to have to wear a fake fin. It's ridiculous. And you can still see yourself in a black actress, just like I saw myself in every single princess, because I was old when The Princess and the Frog came out. Mm-hmm. Way old. That wasn't even, you know, that was for younger little kids and it was great. But, and like you pointed out, you guys have Brave.
Exactly. Yeah, look, I understand if you have red hair, there's social stigma against
it's
having
not,
red hair.
It's not the same.
I'm not saying it's the same thing, right, but I'm not a redhead. I don't get to
community.
Say for them whether they get to be bothered by it. But there are other people on TV with red hair. Disney's doing this because they think that she's going to be great in the role and the movie's going to do really well. And they're probably going to be right. So we'll see. That's capitalism, which these conservatives say they support. Okay, thank you as always.
Thanks for having me.
Great to have you here. Thank you, everybody, for watching. We got a whole week planned and we're going to do it. So we'll see you then. Up until this week, Jeffrey Epstein probably thought he'd gotten away with it for the most part, but not today. With federal prosecutors on Monday unsealing new sex trafficking charges against Jeffrey Epstein, alleging the politically connected multimillionaire abused dozens of female minors at his Manhattan and Palm Beach, Florida homes, and enlisted his victims to expand a network of possible targets. Every word of that sentence is absolutely horrible. Yeah. Now, we're not going to go super in depth into the charges because we have already talked about him and the connections with Acosta and the Trump administration and the sweetheart deal that they got. We're going to go over a little bit. We just want to update you on the new stuff. So Epstein had previously pleaded guilty to Florida state charges of soliciting prostitution to resolve allegations he molested dozens of girls. That arrangement has been widely criticized, including on this show, as too lenient. As part of the deal, he had to spend just more than a year in jail and was allowed to leave daily for work, and he never faced any federal exposure. And I personally think the sort of cool jail where you can leave for as long as you want isn't really jail, it's just not the nicest apartment you could live in. But that's the deal he got. Now, Epstein is 66 years old, a financier who once counted among his friends President Trump and former President Bill Clinton. That's a great group of guys he got there. And the way that Donald Trump comes into this is there's a couple different aspects. One is his personal friendship and past quotes about Epstein, with him once saying in 2002, "I've known Jeff for 15 years, terrific guy. He's a lot of fun to be with. It is even said that he likes beautiful women as much as I do, and many of them are on the younger side," which is a really weird thing to say ever in any way, let alone about this guy who had this weird network and ring of sex solicitation and underage victims and human trafficking and all of that. There is a picture of them that's going around once again. Him and Melania, who's apparently having a very fun time, and Epstein and his current girlfriend, who randomly for Epstein was actually of age at that point. And interestingly as well, in 2017, Politico reported allegations that a woman claiming to have been part of a sex trafficking ring run by Epstein was recruited directly by Maxwell in 1999 from Mar-a-Lago, where the woman, who was then 15 years old, worked as a locker room attendant. Now, as we're filming this, more and more is being unsealed literally throughout today. And we're going to have to find out what new charges they have. But apparently, the deal that he had in Florida was a deal specific to Florida, and it might not protect him now that New York is getting involved.
Right, and what happens when people get away with it, which is essentially what he did, he got away with it. It wasn't a deal, it wasn't a sentence that at all matched the crimes. And so when people get away with things, they continue to do them, it emboldens them. That's what happens, and that's what it appears did happen. And luckily, the attorneys in Florida, the prosecutors in Florida can't make a deal that has anything to do with New York.
Yeah. And so everything that we've talked about are just allegations. Everything we will talk about, just allegations. And I say that because he looks litigious.
He also,
he's friends with Trump. They probably sue pretty freely.
But it's important to know this is a registered sex offender.
Yes.
Everything is allegations. This is also a registered sex offender. And there's a lot of talk about like who else could be charged. And a lot of people being like, oh, it's possible some of your faves are going to be this and this and this. Let me tell you, if one of my faves is a child molester, they're no longer my fave.
Who are these faves that
might come up? Exactly.
T-Swift, I don't know who's. So here's the thing. When this, over the weekend, there were these rumblings that new charges were to come. Mm-hmm. A lot of Republicans were like, oh, he's tied in with Bill Clinton, so the left is going to have to defend him. No, no. We have
this
no.
Not what
you are saying far more about yourself in that case than us. First of all, we weren't defending him before the new charges. We have no interest in defending him now. If Bill Clinton was involved, then set sail with Bill Clinton. He can go to jail too, for all I care. But Donald Trump, look. I don't want to engage any sort of political, you know, like just wishing that like, oh, the guy I hate is going to go down. But he's been involved in a weird partying sense with Epstein. He seems to have understood even as far back as 2002 that Epstein was involved with some underage people. There is the weird connection to Mar-a-Lago that might have nothing to do with Trump, but could. And we know that Trump has had not just a weird obsession with his own daughter when she was younger, but he was barging into, you know, the beauty pageant changing rooms and things like that. He seemed to be willing to transgress in those senses at the very least, not to mention the, you know, constant allegations of sexual assault and sexual harassment.
I mean, Trump is on the record saying positive things about this man. He's also on the record saying he doesn't know this man. He's also in a picture with this man. I don't see anything. Mm-hmm. Regarding Trump happening with this. It's just, he's just been invincible.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be, but I don't see anything.
But what we do know though, is if it does turn out that this stuff is true, we know where Donald Trump will come down in it, because Jules Sosdaltsev on Twitter has unearthed an older, probably, but he unearthed an old tweet by Trump about these people that abuse underage girls, saying that there's far too much leniency. It needs to be a quick trial and then the death penalty. We'll see if he sticks to that
now
that it's one of his former friends. Anyway, lots more details to come. This is all super premature, but that's what's out there as of right now.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.